Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 2nd. I'm Ray Graff. This nation's 250th birthday will be celebrated this weekend. And with that in mind, we welcome three historians who'll tell us about some of the interesting Revolutionary War figures and stories from this region. We welcome Susan Leith, Lauren Roberts, and Kathy Sheehan. And, of course, your calls if you have a question, maybe a story to share. 800-348-2551 is our number. 1-800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. We'll get all patriotic and welcome historians Susan Leith, Lauren Roberts, Kathy Sheehan, and take your calls right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, we celebrate our nation's 250th birthday with a trio of historians. Susan Leith served as Bethlehem's town historian for over 15 years before stepping down in December of 2022. She's a past president of the Bethlehem Historical Association and is the author of three books on historic Bethlehem. Her current project involves investigating Revolutionary War soldiers from Bethlehem, or what is now Bethlehem. Lauren Roberts has been the Saratoga County historian since 2009. She is a co-host of the award-winning podcast, A New York Minute in History, and chairs the Saratoga County 250th Commission. And if you're a regular listener to this show, you already know Kathy Sheehan, executive director of the Hart Clewitt Museum and the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian. You want to talk Revolutionary War history from this region? Feel free to give us a ring. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Long intro today. Well outlasted the music. Susan Leith, Lauren Roberts, Catherine Sheehan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Ray. Thank you. Thanks for having us today.
All right, let's go left to right as I see it. Lauren Roberts, a beautiful work on A New York Minute in History. I'm a big fan.
Thank you.
I know it's generated here, but it's really good. You're on hiatus for some time?
Yeah. Yep. Just taking a little break for a while. Hopefully we'll be back before not too long.
Given Saratoga's sort of historic importance in the revolutionary times, you must have been pretty busy lately.
Since 2022, really, when we started our programming, we have a 13-member commission that was created by the Board of Supervisors, and we're in charge of planning all of those commemorative events and everything that the county wants to highlight for the revolution. I mean, we have a lot of revolutionary sites. We really have three goals: to foster public education, increase heritage tourism, and to have a legacy project. You know, we want to make sure that whatever money we're investing now lives on past the end of the commemoration.
You know, we're not on TV, but when you were sort of recounting all this, a slight weary look on your face. You've been pretty busy, huh?
I will say it has been the busiest time of my career,
yeah.
But it's also been the most fun. I mean, if you had told me 10 years ago you're going to be part of pulling cannon on sleds in the middle of December.
What, they made you do that?
I had to get down and help fix the sleds. You know, things go wrong. I learned how to use a drill.
Were they using a lot of drills in those days?
You know, they did have hand drills.
Well,
I may have used one that was a little bit easier. Mm, you know,
Black and Decker kind of thing.
Yes, right. Yes.
Susan Leith, you were Bethlehem's town historian. You wrote some great books.
Oh,
and
nice.
I must confess that your blog is favorited on my browser because it's so great.
I love to hear that.
What are you up to now?
Oh, I am so curious about Bethlehem's Revolutionary War veterans. There's always a list, right, in our various communities of the veterans from the place.
Yeah.
And I'm like, first of all, what does it mean to be from a place? How does one get on the list?
Yeah.
And then who are these guys, right? Some of them, I could talk about James Selkirk. You all know Selkirk, the mm-hmm. Hamlet of Selkirk. The Slingerland family, we all know Slingerlands. But there's folks on that list, I'm like, who's Zimri Murdoch? I never heard of Zimri Murdoch. Who are these people? What's their story?
And we're going to get into that a little bit today. And
that's been my passion lately.
Yep. Looking at your blog was sort of the inspiration for this show, because I said, oh, there are so many cool people that probably most of us have never heard of. Mm-hmm. And one person I've heard of is Kathy Sheehan. Welcome back. How's your summer going?
Ours are a bit busy.
Have you been pulling any cannons or anything?
No. Pulling Gilded Age things. So, yeah, they just wrapped up. So the whole month of June in Troy and actually in Albany and Schenectady as well. They were down at the Stockade filming. They were down in Center Square in Albany. So it was all 100 years later. It was.
how many years have they been doing that now?
They were just filming for the fourth season.
Now, have they gotten crankier or has the personnel changed? Are they tougher to deal with?
It's amazing. They have most of the same people keep coming back, which is great. And they love being up here. Way easier than filming downstate.
What do you exactly do as an advisor?
For us this year, they actually filmed in our Harcluet house, which is really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. They looked at it for the last 4 years and finally they said, oh yeah, there's a scene that we want to film. I can't relay what that is, of course, but.
So you make a good 35, 40,000 every season they come, right? They're handing it off to you?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
No,
yeah, I wish.
No?
it's cool. So, a lot of times when they're scouting, they're like, we're looking for, a tenement house, or we're looking for, some of maybe worker housing, or we're looking for a middle income, kitchen or something like that. So it's some of the houses that, that I'll know of that we have that I'll say, go talk to this neighbor and go talk to them and see if, twist their arm.
So this has been occupying you. Have you had time to focus on the 250th?
A little bit. Our exhibition that we just opened, it's called A View From Here. We are looking at the peoples of Rensselaer County. And so we do go back even pre-revolution. And, there's a couple of people I'm going to talk about today that came up in our research. But it is interesting because our, Rensselaer County isn't formed until 1791. So during the Revolution, we're all part of Albany County.
Right.
So sometimes it's a little hard to find some of those materials. And we look for pension records and things like that. But it's interesting. But a lot of our town history, we have 14 towns in Rensselaer County, a lot in Albany and Saratoga as well. And so our town historians, there have been ones that have been doing a lot of digging and looking up soldiers, Rev War soldiers' histories and pension records and things like that. So it's fun. So I get, talking to them. They've been filling me in on things.
It's Revolutionary War History from Our Region today with Susan Leith and Lauren Roberts and Kathy Sheehan. Give us a call if you wish, 800-348-2551. Lauren, when I look back at some of these documentaries on Revolutionary War times, one thing that always jumps out is these guys were young. I mean, they were very young. I saw a talk, might have been on C-SPAN, which shows you where my life is, but it was on Bunker Hill, and it was on some of the early battles, and these guys were 15, 16 years old. Where have you been looking in your research leading up to this, Lauren?
Yeah, it's funny you mention age, because we actually have been working on a project where we're looking at young people that were a part of Saratoga. Now, they may have been a resident in the area, they may have been part of the armies, but really that the age really does skew very young, both on the field and then those that were supporting the army. I'm thinking in particular of a young man named John Becker. He was actually from Washington County, just across the river. But we had just mentioned the Henry Knox Trail. He was 12 years old 12. When he was a teamster on the Knox Trail. His father was a teamster, but he also drove one of the teams of horses pulling the sleds. But he and his father, they go on to continue to work for the army throughout the Revolution. And his memoirs, which are written later, he talks about being at the surrender, so he's he's in the war, for the time that it's significant here. So by the time of the surrender, he would have been around 14 years old,
amazing.
Old man by then. Mm-hmm. Right. But his impression, the way that he talks about seeing the rows of red coat soldiers coming at him, or he talks about, one of the when they were laying down their arms on the field of grounded arms, and one of the one of the British Army hands his gun over to his father and says, you damn rebels, I'm not going to be needing this anymore. Something, I'm paraphrasing here.
Yeah.
But you know, his memories are so clear from that time. He's going back and writing. It's really interesting.
Saratoga is one of those places where I bet if you dig for 100 years, you won't find all of the people involved. You know?
That's true.
Who have you found that has surprised you?
One of the projects we've been working on is talking about some underrepresented stories. So I'm going to talk about some women.
Oh, so cool. All right.
Their stories are just as interesting, you know, general human interest stories. One of the main stories we're focusing on is Lady Harriet Ackland. She was the wife of Major John Dyke Ackland, who was shot through both legs in the Second Battle of Saratoga, so the Battle of Bemis Heights. But she has kind of a cool story. You know, she's following the army as they come down, which wasn't unusual for officers' wives to follow the British Army. And they have some trials and tribulations. Her husband is sick, you know, as the British Army is moving south from Canada. And then one time, their dog, Jack Ketch, accidentally tips a lantern over in their tent and sets the tent on fire. Everybody gets out, but Lady Ackland's husband didn't know. He goes back in looking for her. He gets burned. So, you know, really interesting stories. But when they get to Saratoga and Major John Dyke Ackland is wounded, Burgoyne has to leave his hospital behind when he's retreating after the Second Battle. So Major Ackland gets left behind in that hospital. She's a young woman, and she goes to Burgoyne and asks permission to be able to cross enemy lines over to the Americans so she can help care for her wounded husband.
Huh.
And Burgoyne says yes, and Gates says yes. She is put into an open-bottom boat. This is late October, pouring rainstorm, middle of the night, floating down the Hudson River under a flag of truce. She has Brunel with her, who is a chaplain, and her lady's maid. And they make it to the sentries and the American line. And, you know, nobody really knows what's going to happen. But she's able to get on the ground, and she's treated well. They bring her in. She's freezing. They give her tea. Oh, and at the time, she's pregnant.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
I mean,
what
and
could
they
go
talk,
wrong?
Right. But, you know, for years and years, they're talking about her bravery, both sides, right? The Americans and the British, like, wow, can you imagine being a young woman in a foreign country, your husband gets shot, and you have to make these decisions. What do I do? Do I stay in the comfort of the army? Do I go to him across the lines? And, you know, they had these notions about what the American army was. They were not the gentlemanly army of the British, right? That at least was the notion. So she didn't really know what she was getting into in the middle of the night.
Let's take a quick break here. We'll talk to Susan Leith about Bethlehem Way and Kathy Sheehan from over the Rensselaer side. We are joined by Lauren Roberts, Kathy Sheehan, and Susan Leith. It's a Revolutionary War edition of Vox Pop. We'll be back. Happy birthday, America. 250 years old this weekend, and we have three historians with us on Vox Pop. The number here is 800-348-2551. Lauren Roberts is the Saratoga County historian. Kathy Sheehan from the Hart Clewitt Museum is the Rensselaer County and Troy City historian. And Susan Leith was the Bethlehem Town historian for a long time and has written several books on the region. And you're investigating Revolutionary War soldiers from our region. Pull up a little closer to the mic, Susan. What have you learned in your studies?
Ah, so many good stories. Lauren was talking about some of the women and a young man named John Becker. And I'm like, is he related to the Becker family in Bethlehem,
Becker's
who
Corners.
Had several folks that went and served in the Revolution? And you also mentioned the women. And a story I discovered that I didn't know was about Conrad Soup. And Conrad Soup was from South Bethlehem. He was a, you know, Revolutionary War soldier. There's a lot written about him being at Saratoga. And he saw the truce and he, you know, all of that, the surrender. But the family chose to write about his wife, who, while he was away at war, she was home at the farm in Bethlehem and keeping it all together, keeping the homestead going. And she would ride on horseback by herself, braving Tories and Indians, as they like to say, to Schoharie to visit her family because that's where they were from. And that was, they were so interested in her story and bravery of running the homestead and then making this journey. They say like 100 miles. I don't think it's that far, but alone on horseback.
That's a good ride.
Yeah, it's a good ride. And that's a story where you see the list of Revolutionary War soldiers, but you don't see their spouses or their family or whatever. So that was an unexpected story.
Every now and then in Bethlehem, there'll be a new historical marker. And I talk about these with Kathy Sheehan all the time. From around our region, and on the Rensselaer side, there are so many of them. But in Bethlehem, I saw one pop up recently, I don't know, a couple of years ago, right on Ellesmere Ave, about a soldier who I think is buried there, or was it his
property? It was his farm. That's John Leonard,
yeah.
And his farmstead was there. The DAR placed a marker for his burial location near Hamagrell Elementary School.
That's the soldier.
It's the same guy.
Ah.
Yeah. They don't know where his actual burial site is, but they have done the research and know exactly that that's where his homestead was, right there on Ellesmere.
You have been digging into Bethlehem for so long. How many of these do you reckon there are that have never been found yet, these guys who have been lived in town, were Revolutionary War veterans, who died in town and are buried somewhere?
Well, that's the funny thing. What does it mean to be from Bethlehem, right? Did you only live here a little while? Were you born here? Were you raised here? Did you come after the war? Are you buried here? You know, it's fascinating to figure it out. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, James Selkirk, who we just have a book published on his memoir. He was a Continental soldier, served from like 17, a young man, enlisted right at the beginning, served up through Yorktown. His discharge papers are signed by George Washington. And he created a memoir that he wrote at his home in Bethlehem, probably around 1810. And it's so interesting. But he didn't come to what was to become Bethlehem until after the war. So
he was in Lansingburg.
He was. I know. Isn't
or
that wild?
Dresser County.
They do.
Right, now we have a turf war. All right.
I know, right?
Kathy Sheehan.
Who owns it, right?
In your time looking at history of your side of the river, you have, you know, we've talked a lot about Uncle Sam and things that happened later. But what do you know about that Revolutionary War period?
Well, of course, for us, Lawrence has, of course, they've got the Battle of Saratoga. The prequel to that, of course, is the Battle of Bennington, which actually was fought in Waloomsack in Rensselaer County.
By Hoosick Falls,
up in North Hoosick. So, you know, you've got, and what's interesting to me about a lot of all this, you know, there's huge lists of soldiers and again, our town historians have been finding them, and they're getting patriot burials done and fixing over their gravestones and things and putting, you know, Pomeroy historic markers up and which is great. But the big picture of this whole area of getting supplies in is pretty fascinating to me. And when you look at how fertile this Hudson River Valley was, that's why it was so crucial. You know, you got Burgoyne coming down from Canada, and this is what happens with the Battle of Bennington. Like, we're out of horses, we're out of supplies, we have food. And he realizes that, okay, I hear that there's, you know, over here in Bennington, as they're saying, is that we've got a store of, you know, of good supplies, which turns into the battle in August 16th of 1777. And, you know, a month later, 2 months later, is the Battle of Saratoga. But if we didn't have those supplies, it would be a chokehold. And so people in Troy, people in the towns of Brunswick and Pittstown and Hoosick, that fertile valley of the if you would know Route 22 now, you're growing crops, and there's, you know, who are they selling to? That's a lot of some of the things we find are there's like people being accused of selling to the British. It wouldn't be far from the realm of possibility. Everybody's making money. And we have to forget, too, is that there's a lot of Tories here.
Okay, I was just going to ask. What about the sympathizers?
There's a lot of Tories. Yes. You know, we're in New York State, and there is a lot of people. We're doing a lot of business with England who are not so keen on, you know, everybody says, oh, it's all patriots. No, there are thousands of Tories. There really were. So,
well, let's expound on that a little bit. I mean, we talk about the schism during the Civil War, but this is a similar thing, Lauren.
Yeah, especially, you know, in the area that we would become Saratoga County, we're in the same boat. At the time of the Revolution, we're part of Albany County. Saratoga County is not formed until 1791. But the area around Saratoga Lake, this, sometimes they call it a nest of Tories, like in the Charlton area. But, we have a lot of stories about loyalist claims, which help us to go back, because after the war, the loyalists would claim what they lost in this area, their land, their crops, their personal estate, because the patriots in this area were not nice to the loyalists. There's a story that we've been looking into. Elizabeth Monroe Fisher, who her husband was a loyalist. He had fought in the French and Indian War. And she is a young woman. She has a baby, 11 months old. This is during Burgoyne is still up in Fort Edward before he gets to Saratoga. And her husband leaves. He's going to go and fight with the British. And she's home alone early in the morning. There's a knock on the door. She goes outside. The militia, the local militia, has surrounded her house. She's by herself with the baby, and they say, well, where's your husband? And she tells them, he went to the army, he went to the British Army. And they said, get outside. So she goes outside with her baby. They take all the furniture out because they're going to sell it. And then they light her house on fire.
Oh, wow.
She's left in the woods with the baby, no idea what to do. She sees, after a few hours, a man driving a cow towards the British camp, talking about, they needed food, right? So he's going to go and sell his cow. And, he says to her, well, you can follow me if you can keep up. But, there's a lot of dangers around here. She walks something like 20 miles. She talks about how her shoes fell apart within the first, few miles, and she had no stockings left. She ends up, they find a place to stay overnight. She does eventually get to Burgoyne's camp, and she's okay until they start losing and they're in the siege. And then she tells the story that there's no food. And she has this epiphany. She's going to get together with all of the other loyalist refugees that have gone into the British camp for protection. They put their provisions, their very slight provisions, together, and they pay a soldier a guinea to light a fire, because the Americans are picking them off. The riflemen from across the river are picking them off when they see fires.
Oh, wow.
So she and several other women, they put all their provisions together, they make a stew, and then she says a cannonball comes and hits the kettle, and all of their provisions are gone.
But she lived.
She lives.
That's a story.
She lives. She was hungry, but she lives.
The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Susan Leith, Lauren Roberts, and Kathy Sheehan, historians all, here right before the 250th birthday of this nation. This email came in, and this sort of goes to what Kathy was talking about. We often hear, this is from Peter, we often hear about the soldiers of the Continental Army in this neck of the woods, but what role did our area play in the industrial and logistics base of the Army? Can anybody expound on that?
Yeah, I mean, again, because we're all in the Hudson River, certainly as supplies are moving up, but you're growing crops, so you've got contracts with the Army, with the who's ever running that. You become a storehouse for munitions, things like rope. Up in Scaticoke, there was a mill up there that's producing rope and things like that. I mean, it's just one of these weird things that you don't think about.
Yeah.
Really as supplies, and being able to be navigable, which of course up to Troy you've got is right up to what is the federal lock now. So you could be sending things down river, and then then portaging up on the other side past Waterford and up towards Saratoga and. Mm-hmm. And things about over on the Mohawk, we have a little bit more problems.
I'm nodding my head to everything Kathy's saying. And, but also this idea that our area was kind of the breadbasket, growing the wheat and with the cows and the butter. And Bethlehem, as a town, didn't exist at that time. We were on the West Manor, and it was a lot of farming in Bethlehem. I did just recently learn that Queeman's Landing was an important boat-building spot during the Revolution. So maybe we can get their historian to come on.
Is there any sort of physical evidence of that today?
I don't believe there's physical evidence. They just installed a marker, a historic marker.
Have they
in
done
that
any
regard.
Digs around there? That would be fun.
They have. There was an encampment there, so they've been doing a lot of research about an encampment. In Bethlehem, I don't know of an encampment or anything like that, but Queeman's Landing is right next door.
Susan, in your research, was what is now Bethlehem, was that a more Tory-friendly place or a more patriot place?
I'm going to say it was maybe 50-50.
Really?
I really do, because It fascinates me, you know, people having to pick a side, you know, depending on who's coming. You know, if the Committee of Correspondents, those young men, are knocking on your farmhouse door and they say, well, are you with us or against us? What are you going to say? You know, yeah. People know the Slingerland name, the Slingerland's Hamlet. There's a set of cousins that were all loyalists, and there's a set of cousins that were all, you know, patriots. So, you know, you wonder, did they have family dinners where they discussed?
That's so interesting.
Yeah, the whole Slingerland's family. And I know the loyalists ended up serving with, oh my gosh, I have a blank on the person's name, but the Butler's Rangers out of Western New York. They lose everything in Albany County in Bethlehem. They end up on Niagara on the Lake in Canada. And I was at a family, Slingerland family reunion where, you know, the guys come down from Canada and they come here and they all talk about their relatives and they were on different sides. You know, it's fascinating. Yeah.
With one of the churches that we have in Rensselaer County, the Gilead Lutheran Church, which there are a lot of Palatine Germans that were here that served on both sides.
The Hessians. Yeah.
The Hessians. Yeah. Yeah, and the Hessians. So some of they went, you know, went against families, like you mentioned, that would, you know, half families serving for the loyalists.
So they're mercenaries, basically, right?
Yeah, yeah. And we had Native Americans. We had one of the, you know, we talk about the kind of the hidden stories. There was a person we found in the 1800 census in Hoosick. His name was Quam Tanner. He was a black man who served in the 1st Rhode Island Regiment. And as a you could buy your freedom, you know, because New York didn't abolish slavery until 1827.
Right.
Other states around that, there was a gradual emancipation. But he could buy his freedom by enlisting in the army. And he did. He's captured in a battle over near Kingstown. And he ends up being sent to England for the rest of the war as a prisoner of war. But he came back and lived in Hoosick, and he applied for his pension. So the pension records have been really amazing. And we find out that, yes, he was now a free black person. He's listed that way in the census. And then he becomes, you know, through most of the towns in Rensselaer County, between Hoosick and Pittstown, and he finally ends up in Lansingburg, lives to be 96 years old. He never got his land grant, though. A lot of soldiers were promised bounties, and he never got that. But he did get his pension, and he had it for years.
You know, you brought up a couple things that I find worthy of following up on. And one of them is, how were, in your readings on this, how were prisoners treated on both sides? I mean, what sort of living conditions did prisoners deal with?
I mean, I can speak about the Convention Army after Saratoga. So when Burgoyne surrendered, it was a convention, you know, to save face, right, rather
right.
than a total surrender.
Sure.
So it was about 6,000 people. So it's all of the, you know, participants in the army, but the followers, camp followers, are there too. The original deal was that they were supposed to march back to Boston. They would get on ships and go back to England. Well, Congress did not ratify that. They were not going to get the wool pulled over their eyes because the agreement was they wouldn't fight again in North America. Well, the British Army had posts all over the world where they were fighting, so they could just send them somewhere else and bring the replacements
right.
back. So Congress didn't ratify it. So then you've got thousands of people in the winter. The Continental Army couldn't feed their own people. How are they going to feed 6,000 prisoners of war from the British Army? And so they, there are some accounts as they're coming into, as the Convention Army is coming into Cambridge, talking about the smell, how bad they smelled. The women were in rags. Some of them didn't have shoes. Now, remember, the surrender happened on October 17th. They were outside of Boston, I think by the end of November. It was cold. It was snowing. You have women that are, you know, they're having babies while they're marching, you know, newborns. They didn't have great shelters for them. Many of them died. They then eventually marched them down to Virginia. And then they're in Maryland, Pennsylvania. They remain POWs for the rest of the war. Many of them escape. So they're very few numbers by the time the end of the war, and they're able to go back to England. But I think that's probably, like, people forget what happens after Saratoga. You know, you have 6,000 people surrender. Well, where did they go? What happened to them? Who took care of them?
So
they
interesting.
Were in, yeah.
That so many people escaped. Where'd they go?
They stayed in communities here. They sometimes were allowed to go out and work. And so if they were able to go out and get a job, they may have stayed in the community. I know a lot of the Brunswick, so, you know, Hessians and Brunswick German soldiers were a part of the convention army. There are several that, you know, stayed in the area. I know that the historian for the town of Northumberland in Saratoga County is researching a particular soldier who was buried in Northumberland who fought for the British, then came over to the American side. And, you know, so these are people that escaped from the convention army and then stayed in America.
How many historians are there from around this region?
I mean, well, 14 towns. Lot. We have one for each town.
I mean, this is crazy. Do you have a confederation of historians?
We do.
Yeah? What do you do?
Talk about history.
Talk about history.
We do have parties. Yeah. We have the association.
We need to get all of you in one room and do a show. Wouldn't that be something?
Oh, my God.
It'd be interesting.
There might be some fist fights.
There might be.
That's good radio. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. Revolutionary War history from our region with Kathy Sheehan, Lauren Roberts, and Susan Leith. And we will be back. Wayne Shorter here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. Ray Graff with you. It's history today on the eve of our nation's 250th birthday. See, today's the 2nd, so what? That's Saturday. I forgot. I have tomorrow off, so I keep feeling like today is Friday. This email came in to voxpop@wamc.org from Michael. It says, hello, Ray and company. I live in Malta, right in Luther Forest. I understand that Colonel or General Ellsworth was an important person during the Revolutionary War, and in the center of Malta, we have the parade ground, which I assume was used for training troops during the war. Could one of you talk about the Malta area?
Sure.
Yeah, right. That would be
have to be Lauren.
Lauren.
There you go, Lauren.
Yeah, so Elmer Ellsworth was in the Civil War. So he's it is in the war, but it's a later war.
Okay.
And, you know, his fame comes from he was the first officer killed in the Civil War.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to be here for the 250th of the Civil War. I mean, maybe some of you will. I'm not sure. This email came in from Peter. No? Yes, Peter. Rebecca Nagel has done some fascinating research regarding Native Americans before, during, and after the American Revolution and how they have largely been erased from the white history of the Revolution. One of the main grievances in the Declaration of Independence is the issue of Native Americans and the desire to eradicate them. The actual text of the Declaration contains a racial slur in regards to Native Americans. Can any of the panelists comment on this?
I know that the Abenaki tribes were here up in northern Rensselaer County, up in Skaticoke again.
Vermont, too.
Some with the Abenaki, some serving with Burgoyne. You know, they hired Native Americans. They hired other mercenaries to do that. There was a story. It was interesting that showed up in the early 19th century about Solomon Acker, and he talks about how this band of Native Americans that was hired by the British to come and raid, similar to what Lauren had talked about with that story. And you hear a lot about those, and it's kind of interesting because those are some of those early stories that you see later on in the 19th century when we're starting to write our histories. And, you know, like the Solomon Acker goes, he milked this story for years and years. You know, he lived to be an old man. And there was another officer, Van Vechten, who died. And he talked about how he was then scalped. I mean, they just kind of perpetuating that whole, you know, Native American they were all just mercenaries when there were so many people that were just living here. We had, you know, living here as, you know, farming the land, especially up in northern Rensselaer County and in Skaticoke and Hoosick and Pittstown up that way.
Anybody else? Yeah.
Sure. You know, at Saratoga, there were Native Americans on both sides. Notably, the Oneida were with the Patriot Army when they came. Of course, I'm thinking of Two Kettles Together, who came over after the Battle of Oriskany when they came through. So there were people on both sides. I would say probably the one of the better known stories of Native Americans at Saratoga is that of Colonel Louis Cook. So he was of African American and Native descent, and he was at the Schuyler estate actually much earlier when the first raids from the French and the Natives came down. I don't want to say the wrong date, but I want to say it's the 1740s. It's before the French and Indian War. Right. So the first time that the Schuyler house on that spot had been burned down. So he's captured by the French and their Native allies. And his mother, who is Native, asks that he not get sold in the slave markets in Canada, but that he's allowed to grow up Native. And so he does in Kahnawake. And then when it comes to the revolution, he fights for the Americans. And he becomes a colonel. He gets an officer's position, and George Washington knows him. There's a letter where he says, I haven't seen our friend Colonel Cook in a while. So it's kind of an interesting story because he comes back to fight at Saratoga, and this is where he's born, because he lived on the Schuyler estate. But I believe he's the highest ranking officer in the American Army of Native American and African descent. There is a blanking on his name. I think there's a book coming out about him from someone who's in Akwesasne.
It's okay if you want to cheat, by the way. You can look at your phone. It's fine.
But really interesting stories about Native Americans, too. Yeah.
I've had conversations with the Mohican Indians, that were common in the Bethlehem area and serving on the American side when they moved to Stockbridge, when they were pushed out of our area and end up in Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
What year was that around?
When they
were pushed out.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, early 1700s.
The
Stockbridge Munsee.
Yeah, they're the Stockbridge Munsee, but they consider the Bethlehem area their homeland. Yeah. And I know they fought on the American side out of Massachusetts, though. Right. So I don't have a whole lot of details, but I do know that there was participation there.
There's a lot of stories about. We have one up in Steventown, the Brimmer Farm Massacre. Oh. They called about. Yes,
and everybody was talked about.
They were the sons were people were killed, and then they dragged the sons up to Canada, and they were and one of the women that was in the Brimmer Farm, and then they managed to escape, but they lived up there for a number of years, and again, these stories are then published much later.
Much later,
It's the tea table gossip kind of thing, It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's. I think that's the fun part of our jobs is whittling down,
separating those
stories, and not having everybody get mad at us when we talk.
Well, sometimes it's impossible, though, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Are you familiar with the Mordner Kill? And that's, Murderer's Creek.
Murderer's Creek.
And it's an Indian massacre. Yeah. And they make all these, romanticized, I don't know, inflated stories.
Anyway.
Sensationalized stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really fascinating because what's the kernel of truth?
Yeah.
Because it's usually a teeny tiny little bit kernel, but then it becomes this big thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's got to be maddening and extremely fun for all of you.
That's exactly
right. Oh, gosh, yes.
Exactly
knowing that there's some answers you'll never, ever get.
No.
Well.
The letters, I think, some of the letters that you receive, it's not stuff that they letter or things that show up in some of the published histories, but actual letters that you're writing to another person, they tend to be. You're pretty much on the money.
Yeah.
You're not writing that letter thinking someone in the future is going to read that.
Yes.
So you could really write, this is what really happened to me or what happened to our farm or, so I tend to put a little more weight on those personal kind of letters as opposed to.
It's those primary sources, right?
Right, exactly.
It's primary source. Yeah. And going back to the pension applications.
Right.
That's their primary. Yeah. This is what I experienced. Right. This is who I served with.
Mm. Yeah. So they actually had to fill them out.
They filled them out. Yeah.
They had to fill them out.
Yep.
I think that's true of the Benedict Arnold story at Saratoga, right?
Yeah.
Because, for so long we believed the Wilkinson version of events that. Benedict Arnold got in this huge fight with Gates and he was relieved of command, but he charged onto the field anyway and saved the day and he was shot. The Bachelor letter that was discovered and Park Ranger Eric Schnitzer has done a ton of research on. Now, that's written at the time of the event. And he does acknowledge, there were some arguing between Gates and Arnold, But Arnold was never relieved of command. There's never a courts martial. So wouldn't you think, you know, there would be. So, you know, that letter that was written at the time is seems to be much more believable. Arnold wasn't relieved of command. He did, you know, and he goes on. And a lot of people believe, you know, if he had died that day, he would be a martyr of the American Revolution, the hero of Saratoga, instead of this traitor. Whereas Wilkinson is writing his memoirs later, and he's got. He's got a lot of skeletons in his closet.
Oh, yeah.
But he's writing after we know that Arnold's a traitor. Yeah. So, of course, you know, I mean, he's got a biased view because they're memoirs. You know, he's looking back on the events. Right. So,
but couldn't letters have that same bias, too? I mean, there are people who are just not all that honest, right?
Sure.
How do you separate that? In other words, you have primary sources, right?
Right.
And they're letters primarily. Number one, are there any left to find 250 years later? And number two, how are you going to, you know, Benedict Arnold, traitor, for well, you can call him whatever you want. But he had some dichotomy of allegiances. Let's put it that way. How do you trust these people?
Triangulation.
That's
interesting. Okay, yes. Explain.
Great word. That's a perfect word.
To a non-historian,
for it.
Yes. Explain.
Perfect.
Well, I think you have to look at what the does the person have an agenda that's writing? Is there maybe some sort of political gain they can get by writing to this person and, you know, making claims about someone else? Whereas, are they just writing home to their wife and it's more of like a this is what happened today? I mean, there were a lot of people at Saratoga that wrote about Benedict Arnold, that they really respected him and he was an amazing general. So, you know, those guys that are writing at the time, they probably wouldn't write that after 1780.
Right.
But triangulation in general is you're checking the sources around to make sure, like, is this an anomaly or does this fit a pattern of what people are saying about this event?
Yeah. Susan, you have a glint in your eye when you talk about this. You guys really dig this, right?
We do, because
literally.
I don't have a great story, but, you know, it's that, well, they, you know, Conrad Soup, you know, the history book that was written in 1990 says he was there at Burgoyne's surrender. And then you go, okay, and then you read his application, and he's literally digging ditches, right? You know, that's what he was doing, and you're like, was he actually there? You know, I mean, he was there, but was he there? You know, it's that finding all those things around that point to the same conclusion. And half the time you can't find it. So
I'm having so much fun. We have to find another reason to do this again. Susan Leith is here. Lauren Roberts, Kathy Sheehan. It's History Today on this right before our 250th birthday as a nation. Now, Susan and Lauren. You may not have met this person. I know Kathy Sheehan has met this person. I think we should go to Argyle and talk to Merle for a minute. Hello, Merle. How you doing, buddy boy?
I've been waiting patiently.
Hey, good job, buddy.
All right. Now, I don't know if this is outside of your range, because the question has to do with Bunker Hill versus Breed Hill.
Okay.
All right. I've read the book Atkinson. He's got a 3-volume thing out. And if my understanding is correct, Bunker Hill was not Greek like Breed's Hill was. And that's where Dr. Warren was killed, at Breed's Hill.
Okay.
And so my question is, we always refer to it as the Battle of Bunker Hill, even though, I don't know, I think he was a colonel.
Right.
Stark defended Bunker Hill. In other words, British really didn't define. Whereas on Breed's Hill and Dr. Warren, where he was killed, that's where they breached the line, but it's always referred to as Bunker Hill.
Okay. And so this is your bone to pick with our historians today. All right. So what do you think? How do you defend yourself against Merle?
Well, I don't think it's defending. I think it's similar story of the Battle of Willumsack and the Battle of Bennington. You know, yes, the storehouses and things
right.
are all in Bennington.
Exactly.
Exactly. But the battle was largely fought in Rensselaer County. They got the monument bitter.
how did they get that monument?
They got that monument. They put that up before we did. No. I think it's just those, you know, Breeds Hill and Bunker, you know, it did cover a space. And obviously things were happening both. And a large part of that battle, as you said, did happen at Breeds Hill, we think. But I think it's the same thing. There's just mostly the Battle of Bennington really was fought over New York State.
Right.
It was one on our side of the line.
Lauren, you want to jump in?
No, I think it is like kind of a misidentity. You know, all of the major action happens on Breeds Hill. We call it the Battle of Bunker Hill. But yeah, I think you're
Thank
correct
you.
In that.
All right, so
but,
who can Merle write to complain about this?
Somebody in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts,
absolutely.
Who's our lead person in Massachusetts for the Knox Trail?
Jonathan Lane.
There you go.
All right, hey, Merle, we're going to let you go there, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks for hanging in there so long.
I just had one other thought, because Saratoga to me is the same little thing, because it's the Battle of Saratoga, but it's Bemis Heights. It's all the different things.
Yeah.
So it's that same kind of issue.
Yeah, and I think that stems mostly from the Saratoga Patent.
Yeah.
So the area where what we call Schuylerville now, both sides of the river, was the Saratoga Patent, which is where Schuyler had thousands and thousands of acres. His estate is at Saratoga. That's what they're calling it. So the actual surrender happens there at Saratoga. The battles are in the town of Stillwater, or, you know, which is part of Albany County at the time. But it was known, the area was known as Stillwater.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I think it's tough because also the battles have their own names, right? The Battle of Freeman's Farm is the first battle, and then the Battle of Bemis Heights is the second battle. So we're working on a map project now in our new visitor center, the Saratoga Revolutionary Experience, and trying to figure out what to call things is really difficult.
Who gets to make the call?
Yeah, who gets to decide?
You?
I'm not saying.
Wait, the record show she pointed at herself.
No hate mail.
We're with you.
Somebody
we're behind
has to make
you 100%.
The call.
Yeah,
I really do.
Because everybody knows it as Schuylerville now.
Yep.
But it wasn't Schuylerville then. So do you put the modern name on the map so your visitors understand what you're talking about? Or do you put Saratoga and everyone thinks, I'm right next to the racetrack?
Exactly.
All right. Lauren, you must have a lot going on this weekend in Saratoga. What's going on?
We do. At the battlefield itself, at the visitor center, they do a citizenship ceremony on that date every year.
Yeah,
so Saturday, they're welcoming in 10 new citizens.
Great.
And they'll do a reading of the Declaration of Independence, and the Racing City Chorus will be there.
Oh, cool.
And then our friends group, Campaign for Saratoga 250, will be at the racetrack because, of course, this year we have racing. On this hot weekend.
Oh, enjoy.
So the cannon will be there that we had made for the 250th.
Kathy Sheehan pulled.
Yes. And we'll have some militia there. I think they're naming a race. There'll be a short reading of the Declaration of Independence.
Fantastic.
So on and so on.
Are you going to take a little time off after the 4th?
No. It will be October 18th, 2027, because 2027 is our big year.
So you still have to keep working.
Oh,
you have to keep full throttle.
Yep. 15 months.
Susan Leith, sleepy old Bethlehem, anything going on?
Sleepy old Bethlehem, we're having our family fun day on the 4th at the town park, and the Bethlehem Historical Association is going to have a big setup with some information about our veterans and just general town history. There'll be a reading of the Declaration. There's been lots of lecture series, that kind of thing.
You know, I drove by the Slingerland's family plot again over the weekend, and I've never turned left and gone in there.
Is it okay to go there? Yeah, you can walk up there. Yep, absolutely.
All right, Kathy Sheehan, what's happening over in Rentschler for the 4th?
There's going to be a wonderful tableau at the Battle of Willimsack, up in the Battle of Bennington, right at the New York State site. And there's going to be reenactors up there and a whole event and music and period music. And a lot of the students are going to be involved from Hoosick Valley and Hoosick Falls School. So that'll be, I think it starts at 2:00 in the afternoon on the 4th of July.
And you're going to be there?
I'm going to go up. Oh, yeah.
Do you think that if you petition and you have some signs, you can get them to just move that monument a little?
A little bit more, yeah.
Over to who's like.
I will do a shameless plug because August 22nd, which I think is a Saturday, Saturday to Sunday, we're going to do a revolutionary road rally and through Rensselaer County, and just have people will go to our website. It's not up yet, so don't jump on there yet.
All right.
You're going to get clues. and then drive around to different sites in Rensselaer County that are associated with the American Revolution.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Will there be racing cars?
Any parade car you wish to take.
Are there prizes?
You get your AMC Gremlin out there, Ray.
My WAMC Gremlin.
WAMC Gremlin.
Listen, Lauren Roberts, Kathy Sheehan, and Susan Lee, thank you all for being on the show. Happy 4th to you.
Welcome.
Happy 4th to you and everybody else. Yeah.
Support comes from the North Adams Chamber of Commerce presenting First Fridays in downtown North Adams, featuring shops, restaurants, music, and more. The first Friday of every month, nachamber.org for more. And Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, a family-owned garden center and flower farm offering landscape, wedding design services, perennials, annuals, herbs, and interactive classes, balletflowers.com. Thanks again to Susan Leaf, Lauren Roberts, and Kathy Sheehan for being here today. Thank you for listening. Very much appreciated. And I tell you what, I hope you have a lovely and safe 4th of July. I'm Ray Graff. I'll take tomorrow off. We'll hang out this weekend, maybe barbecue and whatnot, watch some fireworks. We'll see you Monday.